Before we begin this episode, a few words from a non-profit that is helping people whose livelihoods have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic.
While the world is still reeling under COVID, Mission Vishwas, a citizen group of Bangalore, is preparing for a post-COVID era by securing livelihood of the job displaced. Livelihood Masks is the name of their movement to make washable, reusable face masks by connecting tailor clusters that are out of work all across India. The sale cost of the masks will fully support the project and the makers. An order of 100 units can support the livelihood of a family for a week. You can either donate fabric or money. You can buy for individual use or mass distribution. For details, look up www.stonesoup.in. That's STONESOUP.IN.
I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed.
My guest on today's show has the unique distinction of helping leaders conquer setbacks and lead more meaningful lives. Her unique and relatable approach includes using stories, humor, personal experiences, and setbacks from her own life to make the point that a setback isn't the end, but a new beginning. She made her debut as an author of the well-received book, Setback Leadership. Welcome to the show, Srijatha.
Thanks a lot, Pawan, for calling me for Coffee by 2 podcast. I'm super thrilled to be here.
Thanks so much, Srijatha. For my listeners, I just want to tell you the basis for this episode. I think right now, leaders the world over are facing a Herculean task in terms of how to lead and how to take their organizations forward. I think this sort of challenge has never happened for most of us, and that also includes leaders. My leaders face a host of challenges in the day-to-day life. This challenge is something which is beyond all of that. And that's the main reason why I wanted to speak to a person who actually coaches leaders and who has actually worked with them closely to understand what makes them tick and how to lead in times like these. I just want to start off with my first question, Srijatha. The path you have chosen is actually very unique. You coach leaders, you know, and in my career, I've seen like many leaders who have perhaps required a lot of coaching, but it has always felt that once you reach a certain level, I don't need coaching. Actually, what set you off on this path?
Very good question. In fact, I think my own challenges set me towards this path, if I have to put it in shorter format. But to give you an example, why I chose this path, so I come from varied experience, and thanks to my upbringing and childhood, I have always felt the need of being different, you know, and being, you know, choosing the less traveled road. Okay. So that was the way I grew up as a child. I mean, my entire family actually encouraged me to always take the road less traveled. That's how I grew up. Now, having said that, of course, after a point in time, coming from a middle class family, they want you to settle down in life and, you know, get your work settled, etc., etc., which is what I chose eventually. But around after 10 years of my corporate life, I realized this is not my path. This is not something that gives me that pleasure that you get by working on something that you really are passionate about. So I quit all of that piece, and then I started my first business, my first entrepreneurship journey. And I am the first generation entrepreneur in my entire family. So obviously, being a first-time entrepreneur, I did a lot of mistakes. I faced a lot of setbacks, challenges, and, you know, uncomfortable situations, and didn't know what to do. And ended up taking wrong decisions. So that's where I was looking for someone who can actually help me come out of it. And honestly, there were so many coaches and mentors available out there. Nobody had the specific solution to me. They were all in the air in terms of, you know, generic stuff, you know, motivational stuff and all of that. So that was one challenge. And then in this process, I started learning how to turn challenges into opportunity on my own. And then I started talking to other leaders. Thanks to my work, thanks to my entrepreneurship and coaching leaders, I speak to a lot of leaders and try and understand their mindset, what goes on to them. And genuine leaders who have really done good in life, they have been through challenges and tough challenges. I'm not talking about day-to-day, you know, traffic challenges or employee quitting challenges, those kind of things. I'm talking about life-threatening, big, huge challenges and how they turn those challenging situations into opportunity and their teams and everybody else around them is fascinating to know. Not only that, but there is a simple formula to that. And that I started learning as well as started implementing for my clients as well. And that's how I landed up in this topic.
Right. I just want to take off from one thing which you said, which is, you know, you face challenges, you approach people, but a lot of the advice was in the air. Because that's also something which I have seen. I mean, like, it's easy to say inspire, motivate, and use all these larger than life words, but not really get people to take action. In your work with leaders, how important is the role of a leader, especially in times of a crisis?
It's pivotal. In fact, it's, you know, it's the leader who's the single most important person in the entire ecosystem who can make or break things from here. It depends upon kind of decisions do they take, what kind of choices do they make, and how calm and composed are they at this point in time to not only go through this current situation, but also to make sure that they are ready for the upcoming new normal, which is what is going to come very soon to us. And we all are hearing that there will be a new normal for our, you know, for the way we run into the world, or we actually look into the world, or we take decisions, or we do things. So for the leader, it will be not only important for them, but for their teams as well, to make sure that the leader is not equipped to handle in today's situation and also prepared for the upcoming situation.
One question which I've always wanted to ask, and I think I found the right person to ask that question. So when someone reaches like a position of leadership, they take up a lot more responsibility. But at the same time, like, people feel that they need to have grown to a certain level. And so what usually happens with leadership is, someone who's like very good at their job is given the job of a leader, but the same person may not be sort of capable of guiding a group or leading a group.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in such situations? Because I feel like in a country like India, a lot of emphasis is given on personal excellence. So if someone is really good at what they do, they are put on top of the perch. But once they get there, they realize that they're not able to lead a group or inspire a group or motivate a group. What do you do in those situations?
So you're absolutely right. And my favorite and classic example is Sachin Tendulkar. I'll tell you why. He's one of the best batsmen in the entire world. There's no doubt about it, right? And he was at the peak of his career when he was given the captaincy. And look what happened. I don't have to explain. Was he bad as a leader? I wouldn't say that. No, that's not what it is. He is an amazing individual performer, right? But does he have the qualities of a leader to lead, nurture, and propel the group to do best? The answer may be no. So yes, you're that people who are, you know, excellent in their personal achievements or who are amazing individual contributor, are they naturally going to become leaders? The answer is no, they cannot. Because there is a different skill set that is required for somebody to become an individual performer or a great individual performer versus a great leader. The needs are different. The skill sets are different. But the best part is you can learn those skills.
Okay, so that was very encouraging when you say that we can actually learn those skills. So can a leader actually grow in a crisis? So for example, if that leader has sort of gotten away till a certain point, because there's not been any major challenge and suddenly they're faced with a huge challenge, is it really sort of unrealistic to expect them to really step up their game, or is it possible?
In fact, I would say that whenever a leader is faced with a huge challenge, is there opportunity to step up and go to the next level. If they really are leaders. If they were pseudo leaders, then the problem happens there and they fall apart. You know, there is no scope of improvement. But if they're truly leaders, every challenge that they face, especially the difficult ones that are like once in a lifetime kind of challenges, those are the very same challenges that present an opportunity for them to take their leadership to the next level.
What has been your experiences in working with leaders? And the reason I'm asking this is because, like, it has always felt that, you know, a leader has all the answers. And even before COVID-19, the world is changing at a rapid pace. So I think it's not realistic for a leader to really have all the solutions or all the answers because stuff is changing so fast. Say about some 30 or 40 years back, you could say that a leader had at least most of the answers. They traversed a path, they got to where they were, they had the experience, and now all they had to do was pass on the experience to others. But right now, a lot of their experience is sort of not really relevant, in the sense what was relevant 10, 15 years back is no longer even in use. So do you think that today's leader has to be sort of more collaborative as opposed to saying, I have all the answers, I know what to do, follow me?
In today's world, why today's world? In any world for that matter, nobody has all the answers. You may be great in one thing, but you may suck in another. You cannot be master of all. That's just not humanly possible. So that's that's a question that all of us, most leaders ask me, what you ask me, that do I need to have all the answers for me to be able to gain respect in front of my followers? And I said, no. In fact, you gain more respect in front of your team when you show that, yes, you don't know and you are vulnerable. Yeah. When you say, yes, guys, I don't know. Can you help me find it out? Or give me some time. I will find it out for you. Both keep you actually increase respect in your followers and in your team's mind because you are as human as them. You are showing empathy to yourself as well as to them. And that is what one of the biggest qualities of a real leader. How empathetic and how vulnerable can they
be? You said previously that all these skills can be taught. I don't want you to delve too deep into it, but how can you teach someone to be more understanding? To sort of realize that someone else is going through a problem or step into someone else's shoes. Just take us through, like, roughly, how can you change someone's core perception of leadership?
It's possible very easily. In fact, there are tools and techniques as well as strategies that I use with my, with my clients. And one such thing is being grateful to your team, right? Most often we say, I have done it. Most leaders talk about, I have done it. I have been this. I have been that. Just instead of saying that, if you change your perspective and say, my team has done it. I am grateful for my team. I am grateful that they are solving this problem. That one change in your mind can actually help you become better, empathetic and aware. So like that, there are multiple ways you can actually bring that change in yourself as a leader to become more empathetic, more vulnerable, aware of the situation better and more inclusive as a leader so that you don't have to demand respect from your team. The team will automatically start respecting you and follow your instructions. Even before you give them.
I think that's a very valid point. And I just want to ask you one small question. What is the reaction when you tell leaders that you suck at some things? Because, like, I feel like sometimes it's very apparent, like, even when we are in a position of leading people, we don't, like, actually realize, right? In the sense, it's right or wrong. And you feel that, I've reached a certain place. I've done this before. It worked there. It worked with X person. So when someone says that it's not working here, we don't really know how to react.
Yes, you're right. And the reaction could be anything from getting hysteric about it, saying that, how can you tell me this, that, I don't know this, or I suck at it, to very benevolent, like, yes, I understand what you're talking about. And I appreciate the fact that you're bringing it out for me. I never realized it. Now I do. And I'm ready to change. So there's one side leaders, it's a 50-50 actually. Some leaders are very, very hysteric the moment they know that this is their weak point and they don't want to face their weak point. And it takes a little bit of work to make them understand that when they acknowledge that they have a weakness, that's when they get better aware about themselves. Therefore, they can not only avoid such situations from coming in front of them, but also can work on those weaknesses and become a little better, in it. On the other hand, we have leaders who understands, yes, that is my problem. Maybe they haven't seen it on the face, or they have not faced the mirror, as what I call it. But when you tell them, they understand it, they face it, and they say, yes, I have this problem. How can I solve it? Okay. So it's easier to work with that set of leaders. It is much faster to change them. But it is also okay to work with the other set of leaders who are confronting that change. But you can pretty much work it out as well. Most often I kind of get them to in a space where they're able, they're agreeing to the fact that yes, they suffer this.
How does someone approach you? So for example, do you work with, say, one leader who needs help, or do you have an entire group of leaders who comes and says, you know, we need help with this organization. Can you help take them to the next level? Because it's hard for a leader to say, I need help. So I'm just curious to know, how does someone approach you? Is it more personal and individual, or is it more collective where you work with groups?
It's both actually. Like as a speaker and coach, I work with organizations. I work with associations.
Right.
Now, you know, answer your questions, the question that how do they approach me? Sometimes it's the organization, the head of the organization, or say the CEO or the CMO of the organization, or the sales, the head of sales comes up saying that I need my leaders to learn XYZ things from me. You know, come and give a speech. So that is one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is that the organization says that I have a leader who needs coaching. And can you coach him or her? Third way, which happens through primarily LinkedIn, that there are leaders who send me PMs, that is private message, and say that, Sujata, we have seen you work on XYZ things. We have seen you doing this kind of work and I need help. Those are the kind of leaders who realize that they have a problem and they want to solve it proactively. I do work with organizations. I do work with groups, and I also do one-on-one coaching with leaders. And I primarily keep my focus on making them realizing their challenges and help them turn those challenges into opportunities. For example, if it is a COVID-19 situation and somebody, an organization comes to me and says that, listen, this is what we are facing right now. We don't know how to do business continuity. How do we take forward? How do we make sure that our leaders are not losing their morale, or employees are not losing their morale? So I sit with them and I understand the exact problem, where is it coming from, and then give them a solution that changes their entire mindset from a problem mindset to a solution mindset, or a victim mindset to a survivor mindset.
So you work with changing the mindset of a leader. But what I've experienced and seen both is that when you are in a position of leadership, it's not always easy to realize the impact that you're having on your team. So you're faced with many challenges. One is meeting some goal, one is to manage egos. How easy or tough is it for a leader to realize, okay, this is the impact I'm having on the people who report to me? Because like very often, it's easy for these things to sort of slip through the cracks. You are chasing one goal of meeting some goal for the next quarter, but you're not really aware that your people are not really on board. So how does a leader figure out, okay, what impact am I having on my people? I mean, is it tough? Is it easy? And how does one do it?
So most often what happens is that it's the boss of the leader. So I'm talking about the CEO or the CFO or the CMO, figuring it out that my leaders or my, you know, frontliners team, you know, head of sales or say VP of sales or VP of marketing is facing a challenge which he or she is unable to figure it out. And I need to come and talk to him or her. Now, my entire approach is not to go and start teaching them, because that doesn't work. That you cannot go and teach them. First, you know, it's like sponge, right? Unless the sponge is ready to receive more water, unless you squeeze it out, then only it takes more water. And so it's very important to understand that fact and, you know, work on that bit. First, take off what, you know, cleaning up whatever is there, which is redundant, which doesn't work anymore. And first, I do that. First, I clean up whatever is redundant, whatever is not working. And that I do it with different kind of techniques and tools and, you know, conversation. And most often, it's very easy for me to do it. All I have to do is ask a couple of questions. It's very, very easy. You know, we tend to complicate things a lot. So I generally don't complicate things at all. First thing I do is I just simplify the whole thing as much as possible. Secondly, I go as a friend of that person, but a friend who's a devil's advocate, who will come and ask you, you know, tough questions. Once you face the mirror, you know for a fact that yes, there is a challenge, and this is that challenge is all about. And this is what that can be done eventually to change that challenge. So First part is, of course, you change your mindset. Before you change your mindset, you have to set the base, which is what I do. Then you change the mindset. Once the mindset is changed, it's important to then start implementing that mindset in their day-to-day life. All my sessions or all my talks, trainings, masterclasses, everything is at the end of the day, it has to be action based on inspiration. So it's not just inspiration and leave it there. You have to be able to take action from that inspiration.
So it's a process. You come here one day, you attend my seminar, and then you're sorted. You're good to go. It's the work actually starts after that.
That's like instant noodles. Who has been, you know, who has eaten instant noodles for everyday food?
Right. No, because a lot of people look for quick fixes. I would also presume that it's a little harder once you reach a certain level, because then you need to unlearn a lot of the stuff which you thought was the way to do something or which you thought was right.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, as I said, I work with young leaders as well as, you know, people who are in their 50s and 60s, both very interestingly. And what I find is that it's a mix. It's again to do with what value system, what belief system, what kind of experiences have you come from, and how rigid are you on your values and belief systems and your experience. So that defines your learnability. That's what I call it, right? And to judge that, I need to just have a 10 minutes conversation with that person, asking them certain questions, and knowing the answer, I know how learnable that person is. And based on the learnability of that person or that team, then I devise a plan for them. Because one size never fits all. And I have seen a lot of boomers, like baby boomers, are very, very receptive to learning new things. There are certain millennials or the 30s and the 40s, they're pretty rigid in their ways, and vice versa. Say that, okay, this age group or this experience group is more rigid than that. It all goes into the fact that, okay, what is that person's value system, belief system, and experiences have taught him or build him up to be. So sometimes there are stronger walls to crack, and sometimes there are softer walls to crack. All you need to do is find that soft spot where you can create the crack, and then the new personality emerges.
What you just described is, I won't say a long process, but a sort of process which you all need to go through at some point. Because I think what we try and do is make very quick changes over a weekend or over a month or over a quarter, which don't really last long. What you described is the actual process that we need to go through to actually bring about change. Which brings me to my next question. We confuse being a leader with having a title. So, for example, tomorrow, if I start a company, I become the founder or CEO. Having a title does not make you a leader. But unfortunately, that's something which we see across. Someone is given a title, you're sort of forced to respect them. You feel that you know more than them. What is the difference between being a real leader and having a title of leadership?
Well, the title of leadership is just like a swanky suit that you can wear. But if the person behind that suit doesn't have substance, after a while, you know, maybe in the first 5 minutes, you create a great impression because you're wearing a swanky Armani suit or something like that, right?
Right.
But after 5 minutes, the moment you open your mouth, you know, the person opposite to you will understand that it's all faff but nothing else, right? So even if you call yourself founder or CEO or XYZ, it's only a title. And to do that, honestly speaking, the best leaders are the ones who have been through many challenges.
If you want to say that someone is a good leader, what impact should that person have on his or her people? What will make you say that about someone?
Okay, so for me, a great leader should be able to invoke respect in the other person without having to open his mouth, his or her mouth. I try and see what others talk about that person behind their back. So when you are in front of me, Pawan, I am going to bound to talk good things about you. But then when I'm behind your back, you're not noticing me, I can be brutally honest about it. This is what first thing that I check with their people, their leaders. And, you know, trust me, I have seen that many people who doesn't even have a title or a fancy designation in that sense have amazing followers. And when I go back deep into the whole thing to understand what is it bringing that kind of a respect, what is that invoking that kind of a respect is, one, empathy. Two, the willingness to give and help others. Three, making the path ready for others to take over the center stage. And four, being vulnerable. Now, how do I find it out? As I said, I first ask people to talk about that leader or whoever is the person that in question behind their back. Then what sets them apart? And most often it is the behavior and the way they treat others with respect, with care, with empathy, that how they treat others. And three, how helpful are they to their team or to their followers when they are in need? So these are some of the things that defines whether this person is true leader or it's just a designation leader.
Okay. And one thing which we keep hearing, and this isn't like only about leadership, but in general, we tend to think that people are inborn leaders. When they were born, they had some DNA which makes them a leader. But that's not really the case. Can you teach leadership to someone?
Yes, absolutely. This is what one of my mentor long time back asked me. The same similar question was actually put through that saying, I can't learn this skill. I'm not capable. I don't have it in my DNA or I don't have it in me. And my mentor said that when you're born, which are the skills were you born with? The same question I'm asking you, Pawan. Which are the skills are you born with?
Zero. Nothing.
There are three skills you are born with. Guess what could they be?
You can hear, speak and listen.
Okay. Let me just, end the suspense. So one is you can cry. The moment a baby is born, starts crying, right? So that's an inborn skill. You can cry or, ask for attention. Second thing is you can feel the hunger and you can eat. And the third skill is that you can poop. These are the skills you're primarily born with.
Right.
Rest is your environment, your values, your belief system, your upbringing, and your experience. So therefore, every skill on this planet is learnable. There is nothing called that this person was born talented, he's born intelligent, he's born XYZ. I don't believe in that.
That's something which is really heartening to hear. I think for anyone who's listening to this podcast, thinking that you have to be good at something to start with, which is sort of like a misconception that even we have about many things. Right now, we're in the midst of a crisis. And this crisis has challenged leaders like no other crisis. What is, for you, the post-COVID-19 leader? As in, I'm sure that there'll be a lot of change in terms of how you're leading teams, what you're going to give importance to. Because right now, if there is someone who gave a lot of importance to, say, Q1 and Q2, that whole thing has just been blown away.
Absolutely.
You have nothing to show, right? What, according to you, is the post-COVID-19 leader? Or what skills should they possess?
I think the leaders post-COVID-19 will become more empathetic, okay? Less demanding, more inclusive, and less of, nitpicking in terms of, okay, you've not done this, or you've not come to office on time, or you're not going away, doing this on this day, and blah, blah. So that is, I think, primarily the leaders will change. Second thing is that they will become more resilient. What I mean by that is they know for a fact, because they have gone through a tornado called COVID-19 and have survived the entire mess for months together, now they are more resilient. So they wouldn't get affected by XYZ things that easily, which used to happen earlier. Three, they'll be more calmer leader. They'll become much calmer, saying that, oh, okay, fine. If there's a challenge, let's deal with it, because we have dealt with much bigger challenges in life. And that will bring out a calmness, a stability in their leadership.
So in many ways, it's like a great equalizer.
Absolutely. It is going to be a great equalizer. It will bring out a lot more sanity in the world. Earlier, what used to happen is a leader is supposed to, okay, I need action. I need results. I need this. I need 15 hours long office hours. And you have to only focus on your work. You can't be managing your family and work together and those things. Those kind of the pseudo-machoism is what I call it. Will go away and they'll understand the human side of people and act accordingly. That's what my guess is.
The last question which I have, and this is something which I've been reading a lot about and which I want to ask someone like you. In the course of our lives and careers, we have some good experiences and some bad experiences in terms of work and career and leadership. And very often, what we find is we start doing the things which we ourselves didn't like what was done to us when we were juniors. It becomes like a default mechanism. You didn't like someone doing that, but when you reach that position, you find yourself doing the same thing. How does one learn from a bad leadership experience or a bad work experience and move forward?
Very good question. And this happens, all over our world, not only in professional space, but in personal space as well. You know, it's like, okay, you were bullied in school, so when you go to college, you bully your junior.
Right.
You know, and things like that, right? Again, you were bullied in college, so when you go to the corporate, you start bullying your subordinate. It not only happens in your professional space, in your personal space as well. And where does it come from? It actually comes from the fact that, yes, I have been through this pain. Why don't I give the same pain to the another? You know, it happens at a subconscious level. And why does it happen? It's because that, okay, I can get rid of my pain. It's like a revenge mentality, right? You know, I have been through this challenge, so I should make others go through this challenge. Right. What people don't realize is that the counter of hate is not hate. It's always love. It's important to first realize the fact that it is counterproductive, not only for the person whom you are putting through the challenge to, it's also counterproductive for you. It's not bringing out the results for you that should as a leader. Hence, retort to a completely different action. This is a saying that we use in coaching world. If you keep doing the same action over and over again, you will see the same results. To change your results, you need to change your action. So if you really want to bring out better results from your leadership, from your team, from your subordinate, from your followers, then you need to change the action that you are starting, because you are the source of it. When you do that, that's when the best results come out. You change your action, your results will change.
You also turned first-time author and released, the first book was released last year, called Setback Leadership. Yes, how many more books can we expect from you?
Because I actually want to write many books.
I feel it's required, that's why.
So yes, I do have plans of writing many, many books. And as we speak, yesterday, as of yesterday, another book got launched, which was co-authored, and it's called Shifting Gears.
Okay.
Basically, there are 21 of us who got together and wrote about our experiences during a crisis like COVID-19 and what we did to shift gears in our professions and in our personal life to make it more useful. So that book is released yesterday, as of yesterday. So with this, I have total 5 books that I have released. One I have written solo and 4 of them are co-authored with other people. Minimum 1 book a year is what I'm planning, but you may see more than that as well.
That's really great to hear. Thanks so much, Srisita, for coming on my podcast. And I think that this topic is really relevant. One, because what we're going through today, and 2, in general, because I feel that leadership is a topic which almost everyone can benefit from in terms of more information. How do you become a better leader and how do you go to the next level? So thank you so much for coming on my show. It's also my first remote show, so you have to make time on a Saturday. So thanks a lot for that.
My pleasure. And I had gala time talking to you about leadership, about setbacks, about challenges and opportunities. That's something that I really love doing it, talking and helping people coming out of their challenges. So yeah, it was a brilliant session. And the questions that you asked actually invoke the right kind of answers. I always say this, when you ask the right questions, you get the right answers. And you did ask me the right questions. Kudos goes to you. Thank you, Pawan, again for calling me to the show. And I hope people love listening to this as well as they get inspired to take action.
Thanks a lot, Srisita.
You can check out the show notes for the show at thecoffeeby2podcast.wordpress.com, where I write about my guests. You can leave your feedback for the show on any platform where you listen to this podcast. Thanks for stopping by for some coffee.